Higher Standards Podcast, brought to you this week and every week by MTGBroDeals.com. MTG Bro Deals, a great place for people giving their opinions about Magic. With me this week, as always, are my co-hosts, Chad.
Hey, everyone.
And Renee.
Hi, guys.
This is episode 2, guys. We made it past the first one. How do you guys feel about last week?
Pretty awesome.
You guys gotten any personal feedback?
We got a listener submission, so that made me feel really good. We know that people can hear when we give a shout-out, and looking forward to other people doing the same.
I talked to a couple of people in person who listened to the podcast, and we'll get into that a little later. I've gotten some feedback on some Facebook groups that I've posted it on, and I just want to say big shout-out to Ryan and company from Cast from Exile for letting me advertise on their Facebook group. That was really cool, and thanks, guys, and everybody go listen to Cast from Exile. So one thing I noticed last week was that we got labeled as explicit on MTG Cast. I submitted us as clean, and after listening to it, I did make 2 slips towards the end when we were talking about Ari Lax. We are going to attempt to keep it clean from here on out, so if anybody slips up, we'll go to some censors. Let's start off with Star City Games. Today we had Sheldon Frierkson? Okay, somebody pronounced that for me.
Frierkson?
Sheldon Frierkson. Okay, when
there
you
go.
We are super sorry, Sheldon.
Yeah, Sheldon, email us. Tell us how to say your name.
Not only that, but congratulations, Sheldon.
Yes, congratulations. And Renee, what was Sheldon running today?
Well, he had Abzan Midrange, but it's a little different from what we have been seeing. You know, it's typical Rhino, Caryatid, Courser package, but no Wingmate Rocks.
Nope.
3 Elspeth, a Nyssa, and a Sorin instead of a Johnny's anywhere.
Yep, so he's going big right here with Elspeth. 3 Elspeth and Nyssa.
Yeah, and then typical lands, although more plains rather than swamps. I think the Abzan list I was running had 2/2/2. He has 3 forests and 2 plains.
Yeah, no swamps at all.
But he has an Urborg, so I guess maybe that massages that a little bit. And then 4 Abzan Charm, 4 Heroes Downfall, 2 Utter End, a Dune Blast,
yeah.
2 Read the Bones, and a 4 Thoughtseize.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's going almost more control here than just an actual mid-range. You know, he's got a ton of removal between Downfall, Utter End, Dune Blast, Abzan Charm, and then he's got some disruption with Thoughtseize, and isn't one of the modes on Abzan Charm? Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else. You know, he's got a lot of draw with Read the Bones and potentially Abzan Charm.
Yep. He's got a big butt, so he's going to stop all that aggro. Yeah, he's just working towards the Planeswalker win, and Dune Blast, if anything else gets in his way, plus Utter End to take care of a lot of those whips.
Yep. So what are we looking at in the sideboard here?
Bile Blight, an Ulcerate, an Unravel the Aether, an Utter End, a Dune Blast, 2 Nyssa, 4 Drown in Sorrow, 2 End Hostility, and 2 more Read the Bones.
Yep, so he's looking to just control the game and wipe the board. I do like the one of Ulcerate, and this is a card that I'm really surprised hasn't gotten more play up to this point. You know, it's a 1 mana, pretty good removal spell. You know, what do you guys think about this card, Ulcerate?
I think the target is really what gets me on this. If it was a little bit more akin to Bile Blight and I was losing 3 life, okay, but if I'm just getting one dude with all the token decks running around, that's maybe not so good.
Okay, so you're not a fan of Ulcerate in general?
Not in the current meta.
Okay, what do you say, Chad?
Yeah, I agree, because Ulcerate, like she said, it's only getting one creature, and while a lot of the creatures are good, the best creatures are much higher than 3 life, 3 butts, so I don't think it's... For 1 mana, it's amazing, but I don't think right now it's going to be working as well as it should be.
Yeah, that's valid. I mean, with Coursers, Siege Rhino, stuff like that everywhere, you know, this is not the ideal piece of removal. And just for those of you that don't know, Ulcerate is a black instant, 1 black. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. You lose 3 life. So
I think that's another part. Like, you losing 3 life is okay if you're getting rid of a giant creature, but knowing that they can just slam a Siege Rhino and you're losing 3 more, or, I mean, that's the only way I could see it working. If you know that if you got 5 mana and you can slam a Siege Rhino and then Ulcerate something, it's like you didn't even lose. But playing with all the pain lands and all the Thoughtseize, because he's running a full set of 4, I don't think Ulcerate's where you want to be. And I think that's why he only chose to run 1.
Right. Okay, also an interesting choice is Unravel the Aether. saw him use this once against a Whip of Erebos. How do you guys like this card?
I've always really liked Unravel the Aether because it's good against the gods. If anybody does happen to be running some, which a lot of people were talking about running some Keranos. Farika is appearing a lot. So is Mogis in a lot of the Mardu-type decks in the sideboard for control matchups. Unravel is good because it shuffles it back in, so it's not destroying it. On top of that, it does just get rid of... It makes it a lot harder for the people playing Whip DC decks to get back to a state where they have a Whip, unless they already have one in their hand. Because likely, by that point, they've also put another Whip into their graveyard.
Yep. And for Drown in Sorrows in the sideboard, that was probably clutch for him, considering all of the Jeskai token decks we saw out there.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of them. And going back to Unravel the Aether, mm-hmm. not only the Whip, that they can just spin themselves. It takes care of Courser. Like, if they're getting a quick mana game, they can take care of that Courser with the really early and even take care of it on their turn, so.
Yep, good point. And we've also got the two Nissas. Renee, you were kind of talking a little smack about Nissa last week. How do you feel about the Nissa in this deck, the one in the main and the two more on the side?
I like the one in the main since you have a greater number of forests, so you have the potential to at least untap the three.
Mm-hmm.
And you can animate a lot since I didn't see a lot of people running End Hostilities.
Right.
At least to the degree that you had been seeing it. So I'm not so afraid of losing all of my lands to a board wipe.
Right.
Two more on the sideboard. I'm not sure if I wouldn't have wanted to use those spaces more wisely.
Yeah, I'm curious what he feels he needs to bring these in against. I mean, she's pretty slow for the aggressive decks, and the other mid-range decks, I don't know. I'd like to see when he brought her in, but I didn't see any of her at all in the top eight, so I don't know. Anything else on this list before we move on?
I like seeing Dune Blast a lot.
Yeah.
Since you are seeing a lot of the decks that are pumping out a lot of creatures in one turn.
Yeah.
So this lets you get to that point where you're stable, push a little bit past it, and then have that one creature stay and everything else gone.
Yeah, you think that one in the main is kind of greedy, or you think that's a good idea?
I think one is fine in the main, because you don't want one in your hand.
No, yeah. Not at all.
I think one in the main is excellent, because a lot of, like, it seems like he's trying to get tons of mana. Seems like he's trying to get there. Also, I have to touch on the draw mechanic. He's got a lot of draw mechanic in this deck, and it's for a blue deck, for a non-blue deck, it's amazing, because he's got four Abzan Charm, which can draw him two and lose two.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, he's got two Read the Bones in the main and two in the side, so
yeah.
He can board them in, and he can almost race the Jeskai or the ones that have Dig Through Time or Treasure Cruise.
Yeah, it seemed like he was expecting to see a lot of that this weekend, and the four thoughts he's in the main, too, kind of throw all that disruption out there.
Yep.
So.
Plus, he has eight Scry lands.
Yep.
Oh, so. Good point.
All right, in second place, we had Brad Nelson playing the Jeskai Tokens deck. Been seeing this a lot lately, especially on Magic Online. We saw this, we had just started to see this a little bit last week, and we're seeing it a lot here this week in the Open, and we even saw it later on in the World Championships. Just run down the list real quick. 4 Goblin Rabble Master, 3 Seeker of the Way, 2 Chandra Pyromaster, 4 Jeskai Ascendancy, of course, 2 Jeskai Charm, 4 Lightning Strike, 1 Magma Jet, 4 Raise the Alarm, 4 Stoke the Flames, a lot of damage there. 4 Hordling Outburst, 4 Treasure Cruise. Good old Treasure Cruise. The idea behind this deck is get your token generating out quick, either your Rabble Master, your Raise the Alarm, drop Jeskai Ascendancy, and then just kind of start going off, just casting spell after spell during your turn, pump up your guys bigger and bigger. It's not the modern version where you're looking to combo out in one turn, because you can do this over a couple of turns to just get that advantage, that incremental advantage, and let Ascendancy do its thing. What do you guys think of this deck?
I think it still has the possibility of doing the combo. I mean, it's not going to be a forever combo, but it's definitely going to be able to end the game very quickly. Running 4 Jeskai Ascendancies, you're always going to hit it, and with a possibility of 2, that's going to make the game so much harder for the other player, cycling through your deck and pumping your dudes. Chandra Pyromaster, her exile ability is great in this deck, because you can, like, if you have the board filled and you hit a Treasure Cruise, Ancestral Recall is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that card's good.
Yeah. Hordling Outburst, like last week, this is seeing so much play.
Yep. We say, Renee.
I don't know. I'm so sad because this is the deck I expected to play against this weekend.
Yeah.
And then I didn't play against this all weekend.
Oh, you didn't see it at all, huh?
I didn't see this at all. And then I see it all over the place at this Open, and I'm like, I should have gone to this Open.
No kidding.
You know, way out in Portland on the other side of the country.
Yeah. Looking at the sideboard real quick, we've got 4 Disdainful Stroke, 2 Erase, 2 Magma Spray, 1 Elspeth Sun's Champion, only 1 Anger of the Gods, 3 Inhostilities, and 2 Glare of Heresy. I like Disdainful Stroke. I think that's a very underrated counterspell in this format. It hits so many things, and people still are not playing around it nearly as much as they should be. I'm honestly surprised there's not a couple in the main.
Disdainful Stroke has been undervalued, but it seems to be got a lot of play in this weekend. And be it Teemer or Jeskai, they knew how to use it. And unfortunately for Brad, his opponent who got first, Sheldon, he played around it really well, and that's how he won the won game 2, because he somehow knew that Brad was had a Disdainful Stroke in hand, and he chose not to play a Siege Rhino until Brad had to tap out.
That's true. I was watching when he was doing that, and yeah, I think I even messaged you on Facebook saying, you know, watching him play around that Disdainful Stroke is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Disdainful Stroke is just amazing. It saved my life quite often during the weekend.
Okay, so you're playing it in your deck?
Yeah, I'm playing it in the sideboard right now in my deck with Dissolve in the main board.
Okay.
And then I bring them in if I find out that their curve is higher, and then Negates, and if I find out that they're more of a control build.
Okay.
Now, would you felt better playing it in the main for this weekend, or no?
Probably, if I had expected as much four-color control.
Gotcha.
Moving on, in third and fourth, we had Jerry Thompson and Glenn Jones running Abzan Reanimator. Chad, why don't you cover this one for us?
All right. So before we get into this, I have to mention, kudos to Jerry Thompson for loving his friend, because he was paired up with Brad Nelson, and he chose to, going in, I might add, with a 9-0 record, and he won the quarterfinals. Going against Brad Nelson, he chose to forfeit so that Brad could go into the Players' Championship.
Yep.
And so kudos to Jerry, and I think that if he played against Brad, he might have won it all, because I think that Abzan Reanimator has a better play against Abzan midrange.
Yeah.
25 creatures. He's got 2 Fleecemane Lion, 3 Hornet Queen, 1 Reclamation Sage in the main, 4 Satyr Wayfinders, 4 Siege Rhinos, 1 Soul of Innistrad, 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 4 Courser of Kruphix, and 2 Doomwake Giants. He's running a full 24 lands, and for the caveat, he's got 2 Urborg, and unfortunately, even though he won, he was holding 2 in his hand a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched at least twice when he drew an Urborg while he had one on the battlefield.
Yeah. He's got 11 spells, 2 Heroes Downfall, 3 Murderous Cut, 3 Whip of Erebos, 2 Commune with the Gods, 1 Thoughtseize.
3 Whip of Erebos. We're seeing that a lot in some of these decks, opting to not go with the full 4. But everything else looks good. It's a pretty balanced deck. You know, you got a lot of your basic Abzan cards in here. You got your Siege Rhinos, got your Coursers, Caryatids, all that. But then, of course, you got your Hornet Queens, which are so huge against a lot of these other mid-range matchups. And I'll get into my personal experience fighting against Whip and Hornet Queen, but just really good combination, and yeah, like you said, kudos to Jerry Thompson for scooping to his friend Brad Nelson, giving him a chance to go into the Players' Championships. That was pretty cool, though it ended up not working out well for Brad as he lost in the finals, but I respect Jerry for doing that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and he's doing what I thought people should have done last week. He's running 4 Satyr Wayfinders and 2 Commune with the Gods. Well, I think Commune hits better than Satyr.
Mm-hmm.
He's still got a full package, so he knows what he wants.
Yep.
In the sideboard, he's running 1 Reclamation Sage, 2 Abzan Charm, 1 Erase, 1 Utter End, 1 Farika, God of Affliction, 2 Nissa, World Wicker, 3 Drown in Sorrow, 2 Glare of Heresy, and 2 Thoughtseize.
So the 2 Nissa in the sideboard, that goes back to what you were saying last week, Renee, about people just jamming in Nissa just because they're playing green. You still feel that way in this deck?
I definitely feel this way in this deck. I think I would have felt more comfortable with either 2 more Abzan Charm,
mm-hmm.
another Reclamation Sage, another other, like, just any more of these other spells than 2 Nissa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how often he brought in Nissa.
Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing. I'm like, what matchup are you expecting to see that you want to bring in these Nissas?
Whereas I can name a whole bunch off the top of my head where I want a Reclamation Sage.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
How do you guys like Glare of Heresy? That's been seeing a lot of play in sideboards. I play it in my sideboard, though. That might get switched out for a race soon. But how do you guys feel about that card?
I think it's worth it. I mean, Elspeth is a big problem later in the game, and if you have it in your board, that's what you have it for. It can take care of Siege Rhino if that's going to be a big problem. There's a lot of Butcher of the Horde still glaring if Mardu's the deck you're playing against.
Mm. Ha ha ha, glaring.
Yes, yes. And something else that I want to mention is one of the reasons why these whip decks are just going nuts right now is there's really not much graveyard hate in the format. I think we have one creature from the Theros block. He's a black creature with Constellation. Whenever he or another enchantment hits, exile an opponent's graveyard. But as far as I know, that's pretty much the only graveyard hate card we have out there right now.
Only other thing I can think of is Anafenza, where, you know, if a creature goes to the graveyard, it's exiled instead.
Yep.
Which I'm surprised that we're not seeing more Anafenza appear just from Delve alone.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of that, looking back at the first place deck, he's not running Anafenza in the main or the side.
Yeah.
So, kind of curious. But
which,
you know,
I would want instead of Nissa.
Hey.
There you go. There's our Nissa replacement. Okay, how is Jerry's list any different from the fourth place list, Glenn Jones, or is it different at all?
Glenn isn't running any Soul of Innistrad's.
Yeah, he's running one in this side, so he opted not to choose it in the main.
But in a funny piece of irony, he's running Anafenza in his sideboard.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, I wonder where in their placement Jerry was able to bring in Nissa more often, or Anafenza more often for Glenn to use them more effectively.
Honestly, right now, with all the Sidisi decks and now this new Abzan Reanimator deck running around, you gotta think Anafenza would be coming in a hell of a lot more often than Nissa.
Yeah. And Glenn still has one Nissa, which I think is reasonable in the sideboard, but two, I just don't know with two.
Yeah, well, he's definitely ready for any kind of Reanimator mirror between Reclamation Sage and Anafenza, you know, getting rid of their Whip of Erebos, and dealing with any creatures going to their graveyard.
I feel like Glenn's sideboard is a lot better balanced.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
definitely.
Another difference is Jerry's running two Fleecemane Lion in the main, and Glenn is running none in the entire deck, and he's running a Singleton Elvish Mystic.
And a Singleton Reclamation Sage in the main.
Now, I can get behind the Singleton Reclamation Sage, but this Singleton Mystic, this is kind of going back to what we were talking about last week.
I would like to talk to the people, like, and ask them, all right, first of all, when did you have that in your main, and, like, your main seven when you drew, and what did it do for you? Because, like we said last time, he's running four forests, but you're not going to be hitting that every time.
Yeah, I think maybe he's just looking to slightly increase having that mana dork in the beginning, you know, because he's got the four Caryatids. So maybe just the one Mystic will hopefully increase his chances of having a dork turn one, but he doesn't want much more than that.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit of acceleration. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, I could understand if it was a Birds of Paradise, but we don't have that in this format. So to me, running an Elvish Mystic in a three-color deck isn't going to net you much worth.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering if he just wants to try and slam Whip on turn three as, you know, as much as possible.
Yeah.
Or the, you can't even really guarantee the turn two Courser most of the times, because with just that one Mystic, you know, it's not going to happen too often.
Yeah. I have to say, for the lands in both their decks, and I think they both collaborated on this, two Urborgs, I know that it hated on Jerry most of the time he was playing, but
yeah.
I like it.
I think that was just bad luck, because it's very likely you're just going to pitch one of those into the grave anyway between Commune with the Gods and Satyr Wayfinder.
Yeah, and it's still, I mean, even if you're not and you have the other one, I even noticed Jerry did one game where he had one out, he used it for mana, he put the other one out, pitched the first, and he had extra value for Murderous Cut because he could delve it away.
Yeah. Only
which I don't think that's bad at all. You see people doing it with Nykthos all the time, so
yeah.
You can make what you have.
Yeah. Only problem, though, is sometimes, you know, you're helping out your opponent, because there were a couple of games between the World Championship and the Star City where I saw guys taking so much damage from their own pain lands, you know, where having an Urborg in play allows you to tap it for a black whenever you need to.
True.
And how many decks are running black right now? You know, you've got quite a few between the Abzan, the Mardu, and Sultai, so... You're potentially helping your opponent, because in Mardu, I don't run Urborg. And, you know, sometimes I do have to take a lot of damage on my own pain lands. But if my opponent drops an Urborg, sure, I'll take it. Anything else on these two Abzan reanimators? Okay, I think that is a no.
Sorry.
All right. In fifth place, we have Mardu Midrange, my personal favorite. This guy's running a little bit differently from me. He's running three Stormbreath Dragons in the main. I don't run any Stormbreath in the main or the side. I opt for a third Sorin and two Sarkhans. Instead, he's running the three Stormbreaths in the main, one Chandra Pyromaster in the main, which I can get on board with that. The card advantage can be pretty handy sometimes, because with Mardu, 25 lands, I find I flood out fairly often, which can be annoying. He's running four Hordling Outbursts, two Murderous Cuts instead of the typical one, two Magma Jets, three Lightning Strikes, four Crackling Doom, three Chain to the Rocks. Not too different from the list we've seen before, though if you look, he is running two Erase in the sideboard, no Glare of Heresy, and that's a change I've been considering making lately, because though I like Glare, Whip is just a huge problem for me right now, and I would much rather have that instant speed, one mana removal spell for that. What do you guys think? What do you think Glare versus Erase right now in Standard?
I still have to go with Glare, just because of the fact that Erase is... I know there's the Whip, and I know there's the Coursers, but Glare's going to get rid of your Siege Rhinos. Glare's going to get rid of your Planeswalkers.
Yeah, I agree. And up to this point, Glare's been really good for me. And, you know, like you said, hitting the Siege Rhinos is huge. Killing Elspeth is huge. But, yeah, right now with these whip decks everywhere, I think it might be skewed more towards Erase. Renee?
I feel like, as somebody who plays a lot of green, I don't have to make this decision.
Fair enough.
I think I would go with Glare. It says target white permanent, which covers so much more. And I get what you're saying with the whip. I just can't. At that point, I feel like there's got to be something else you can do with the whip.
Okay.
I have to ask, why 20, like, because you play the deck, Jason, why 25 lands over 24?
Missing a land drop crushes this deck. Like, if you miss a land drop up to 5, at any point, you're... so far behind at that point. I mean, unless you just have a lot of gas in your hand, like a lot of early gas, like Seekers, Goblin Rabble Masters, but you want to hit a land drop every single turn, because the reason that this deck is so good is because of how it curves out. The perfect curve is, you know, you tap land on one, turn two either dropping Seeker of the Way or holding a Magma Jet or Lightning Strike. Turn three, dropping either your Rabble Master or your Hordling Outburst. Into turn four, into either Sorin or Butcher of the Horde. Into turn five, your Stormbreath, your Sarkhan, that kind of thing. The way this deck curves out is why it's so good, and you do have to curve out perfectly. And, you know, the downfall of that is sometimes you do get mana flooded, and lately I have been getting flooded a lot more than before, so consider trying it with 24, but 25 does seem to be the sweet spot.
Okay.
Even on the deck, Trevor plays Mardu midrange, quote-unquote, where Butcher is the top of the curve. There's a Johnny, but he's like a one-of.
Yeah.
And he plays 24. And once again, like, if you miss one of those land drops, the deck is just hosed.
Yeah. Yeah, because some of the decks can just, especially like the Abzan midrange, they curve out really well, and they can build up big early advantages, and you have to be able to counter that, or you're just done. All right, nothing else special about this list. Looking at the rest of the top eight, we've got another Jeskai Tokens in sixth, another Sultai Reanimator in seventh, and another Abzan Midrange in eighth. Looking at the rest of the top 16, we've got a Green-Black Reanimator, Esper Control, so still some control showing its head, Abzan Midrange, Mardu Midrange, Jeskai Tokens again, Blue-White Heroic, Teemer Monster, so Teemer making a showing in the top 16, and then Blue-Black Control, which, just taking a look, yep, it is the 2 Pearlake Ancient Dirtle Blue-Black Control. Anybody want to talk about anything else in the top 16 here?
I find it so wrong that these Blue-Black Controlists aren't playing Ashiok.
Yeah, and you know what? I saw Ashiok put in some insane work this weekend. It was.
I exiled 30 cards from somebody this weekend.
Yeah, that's. Now, one interesting thing that's in this sideboard that it wasn't really there before, but it's starting to poke its head is Grind Clock. This is just truly a dirtily grindy deck, especially when you put in the Grind Clock. I guess that's mostly for the control mirror. God, this has just got to be disgusting playing against. And he's even running things like Negate in the main.
And Nullify.
Yeah, yeah, two Nullify. So, oh. Savage, you know, let's just run through this list. Anybody want to run the list real quick?
Sure. All right, creatures, like Jason said, two Prelake Ancients. He's got 28 lands.
Oh, my God.
And then 30 spells. Here we go. Four Perilous Vaults, one Aether Spouts, two Bioblight, four Dig Through Time, two Disdainful Stroke, four Dissolve, four Heroes Downfall, three Jace's Ingenuity, one Murderous Cut, one Negate, two Nullify, one Despise, and one Thoughtseize.
So that's interesting, is he's only running one Despise, one Thoughtseize. You'd think in a deck like this, he'd want to run the full four Thoughtseize. I don't know why he wouldn't at this point.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like he has anything that interacts with the graveyard. So if a whip drops, it doesn't seem like he's going to benefit from that.
Yeah, at that point, he's got to hope he's got either Vault online or, you know, a counterspell in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really it.
Even, like, I'm just sitting here, I'm like, with Grind Clock, why not put Ashiok in and just sit there and mill them? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, if you drop it at the right time, you know, you can hold up a piece of removal and a counterspell. Drop Ashiok in, like, six, holding maybe Negate and, I don't know, your Murderous Cut. And just kind of hope you can defend her for a turn until you can untap again and then win the game.
And I'm also loving the inclusion of Radiant Fountain in the lands just to gain the two life.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great interaction with Prelake Ancient.
Yeah.
You got to return him to your hand. You might as well return those lands that give you all that life back.
Yeah.
And 28 lands. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's treating it like a Glimmer Post almost.
Yeah, so that's a lot of lands, but, you know, it got him to 16th, so good on him. And again, I believe we have every clan represented in this top 16. Teemer barely making the cut at 15, but we've got everybody else represented and then a couple other decks as well. So again, very diverse standard, though we're starting to see some decks being more favorite. You know, we're seeing more of these whip decks, be it the Abzan or Sultai. And we're starting to see this, you know, uprising of Jeskai tokens with the Jeskai Ascendancy. So, moving on, as we mentioned before, we also had the 2014 World Championships this week. They lasted for several days, multiple formats. Our top four were... Chad, you want to get this?
Sure, thanks.
I have them in order if you want them.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
go for it,
Renee.
All right, in first place, we had Shahar Shenhar.
Yep,
second
congratulations
place
to him.
Yes, definitely. On his second in a row.
Yes, very big.
In second place, we had Patrick Chapin.
Yep.
Third place, we had Yuya Watanabe.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth place, we had Kentaro Yamamoto. Do we want to do top eight?
Sure, go through it. I've only got top four on my screen, but go ahead with the top eight.
Okay. Fifth place, we had Sean McLaren.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth place, we had Yuki Ichikawa.
Okay.
Seventh place, we had Ivan Flock. And eighth place, we had William Huey Jensen. Come on, I got through all of those four names just fine.
So, say his name again.
Jensen.
All right. We'll edit all this out, don't worry. So, yeah, again, congratulations to Shahar Shenhar. You know, second world championship in a row. I'm pretty sure this is the first time that's ever happened. Big kudos to him. We're not going to cover all of the different format decks. We're just looking at standards. So... I'm going to go over how each of these guys did in standard. For Yuya Watanabe, he went 3-0-1 in the standard portion of the Swiss. Patrick Chapin only went 2-2 in standard. We've got Mr. Yamamoto went 1-2-1 in standard. And Shahar Shenhar also went 2-2. So, you know, looking at this from a standard perspective, these guys did much better, aside from Watanabe, they did much better in their other formats than they did in standard. So keep that in mind as we're going over these deck lists, because, you know, you may be quick to kind of jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, this Shenhar's list was the best deck in standard. Well, not necessarily, because he only went 2-2 with it in the Swiss. Let's take a look at his winning deck list. Shahar Shenhar playing Sidisi Whip. I'll go ahead and cover this if you guys don't mind. For Planeswalkers, we have two Ashiok, Nightmare Weaver. This was huge for him in the top eight, or in the top four, I should say. I watched some of him on coverage, and man, that thing did some work. It was really, really good for him. So two in the main in this deck, in a Sidisi Whip deck, mind you. So we've got four Coursers, four Caryatids, four Satyr Wayfinders, three Hornet Queen. Again, I can't say enough about Hornet Queen and Whip of Erebos. Two Doomwake Giant, one Soul of Innistrad, so he is running the Soul of Innistrad. Four Sidisi Blood Tyrant, three Thoughtseize, four Murderous Cut, three Heroes Downfall. And for artifacts, he has the three Whip of Erebos, only running 23 lands. And one land that I want to bring up, I actually wrote this on Facebook today, was Evolving Wilds.
Yeah.
That in a format where we have real fetch lands, Evolving Wilds was played in the finals of the World Championship. That is hilarious to me. What do you guys think?
Not only that, he's only running two Polluted Deltas as the other fetch lands. So it seems like maybe he just wanted to save the life lost.
I don't even think it's that. I think he's just really wanted to go fetch those forests.
Yeah, it gives him a chance to fetch the forests or any of the basics that he needs. But, you know, it's so slow because it's basically a land that just comes into play tap. But, I mean, I guess at the same time, we're doing that anyway. But he's already got his four Opulent Palaces in there. I guess he feels he can afford to be slow enough to have yet another tap land that's only going to be one color. I guess just to really get his fixing on and, you know, to thin out his deck a little bit more. But I just thought it was hilarious, the fact that he's running Wilds when we have real fetches in the format. I thought that was worth mentioning.
And he only chose to play three temples, so he's only got three possible scries.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you'd want to maybe throw another temple in instead of the Wilds, because it's basically a land coming into play tapped anyway. You can kind of manipulate your deck, but yeah. He felt he needed it, and, you know, he's the two-time world champion, so I'm not gonna question him too much, but that's something I found was pretty funny. Yeah, I had to kind of chuckle when I saw it on camera today.
Yeah, so, it's interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess, really, I'd much rather see a Singleton Evolving Wilds over a Singleton Elvish Mystic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think all of us will agree with that. Yes,
I absolutely agree. So there it is. That's the secret tech. That's what everybody else has been missing. Forget the Mystics. Go Evolving Wilds.
Let somebody else put out an Urborg. That Evolving Wilds is now a Swamp.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Who says I can't use it the turn I come into play?
You know, right?
So, all right, in the sideboard, we've got one more Ashiok, two Reclamation Sage, one Drown in Sorrow, one more Soul of Innistrad, three Disdainful Stroke, again, great card, one Dig Through Time, two Sultai Charm, three Bile Blight, and one Farika, God of Affliction. So, not a bad sideboard, you know, a lot of the usual suspects. One Dig Through Time is kind of curious. I guess if you're really just searching up for that Sidisi or that Whip of Erebos, maybe in
or
a
that
deck.
Evolving Wilds.
Yeah, oh, of course for that Evolving Wilds, you know, in a deck that's got a lot of maybe some removal or counter spells, you know, I guess that's what he brings us in against. Only one Drown in Sorrow, but he does have three Bile Blights, so I guess he wasn't too worried about the aggressive matchup. And again, Ashiok did some real good work for him. I expect to see more of that going forward.
I like the addition of two Sultai Charms, because it's going to take care of your whips that are running around, and also it can fix your hand and your graveyard, because it's draw two cards. It's well, Sultai Charm is a black, a green, and a blue. It's an instant. Choose one. First, destroy target mono-colored creature. Two, destroy target artifact or enchantment. And three, draw two cards, then discard a card. So possibly, if he draws two cards and he's got a whip on the board and a Hornet Queen in his hand, he can pitch that to the bin in order to get some extra defenders.
Mm-hmm. And being at instant speed, you know, having that draw two, discard one at the end of their turn is pretty good. So, yeah, I like it. It's a good charm. I mean, all of the charms are good in one way or another. So, yeah, I like this one. It can act as removal for either creatures or artifacts or enchantments, which are pretty relevant right now, considering all the Whip of Erebos going around. So, yeah, Sultai Charm, good card. Surprised there's not more in here.
It is really good, especially when you look at the mass of monocolored creatures in Standard right now. Like, of course, your big guys are your Butchers and your Sea Drinos and those types of guys, but all of the little dudes that lead up to that are all monocolored, and without the smaller guys to get to the bigger mid-range type items in the deck,
yeah,
it just kind of starts to fall apart.
Yeah, and you got Courser, you got Doomwake Giant, you know, you do have some pretty good monocolor creatures out there.
Take care of a Courser before you can get another land.
Yep. And he was playing against Patrick Chapin in the finals. Patrick Chapin was on another Abzan midrange. Anybody have anything special to say about this? It looks fairly stock.
He's playing Bromaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bromaz, King of the Kitties.
Yep, he's got two in there. It's decent card. I did not do too well for him on camera, especially in the finals. By the time he got him out, it was either just removed right away or too late. You know, he's got your typical green package, your Caryatid, your Coursers. And again, I say, how are people going to play green once these rotate? They're not going to know what to do.
Oh, we'll know what to do.
Got his Thoughtseize. He's got running a full four Thoughtseize. He's running one Read the Bones in the main.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay. One Utter End in the main. Four Abzan Charm and four Heroes Downfall. I'm like an Abzan Charm, too. All of these charms, their modes are really nice when you use them right. You know,
I still find myself missing Golgari Charm.
Do you?
Yeah, I really want the Regenerate All Creatures.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, in a format like this, it's not as good, I don't think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
I like that Abzan Charm. It seems like he chose to run only one Read the Bones because he had four Abzan Charms. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It seems like he was using that as fixing and taking care of whatever threat's going to be the problem.
And again, you know, being an instant, I saw a lot of times, into your turn, Abzan Charm to draw two, lose two life. It's really good for an Abzan deck that's not used to being able to do things like that.
Like,
yeah.
Abzan Charm and Read the Bones have the same CMC. So, to me, in Abzan decks where you are definitely going to be getting those three colors, I've never had a time playing Abzan where I don't get the three colors within the first, at most, four turns.
Yep.
Why not have the multiple modes?
Yeah, just have the full four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I like it. And for the lands, he's got 25 lands. He's got damn near every one of his lands coming into play tapped. He's got four Citadels, four Temple of Malady, three Temple of Silence, one Temple of Plenty. So all those lands come into play tapped. And only one Urborg. Looking at his sideboard, Utter End, three Bile Blight, one Glare, two Anafenza, which he did bring in, but didn't really do much for him at that point. One Murderous Cut, one Liliana Vess. I'm assuming that's for the control matchup.
I believe he played it against Shahar in the Swiss on the early days, and he ended up, what did he find? I think he ended up finding a Thoughtseize and took care of his hand. So it was pretty good for him in the early games. Unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to use it in the finals.
Yep, and then we got Renee's favorite, a Singleton Nissa. Two Read the Bones, so he's got a lot of card draw between the main and the side. Two Inhostilities, because if you're playing white and you're playing midrange, apparently you also play Inhostilities in the board. And one Doomblast. I like his deck, but it's just, it doesn't, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of getting soft on Abzan, just your normal Abzan anyway. It just doesn't do much for me, I guess.
I don't feel like it's molded well to what the meta is becoming.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. So, yeah.
I'm glad I can put it into words.
Yes.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, words are hard sometimes.
They are.
Do you guys want to talk about the other two lists in the top four, especially Yuya Watanabe, who actually did go 3-0-1 in the standard portion of the Swiss, running, again, the Jeskai Tokens deck?
It's very similar to the rest of the tokens deck we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it seems just like Brad Nelson's.
I think this is the identical deck list.
We're playing Sadisi Whip for Kentaro.
Yep. So.
And that's just about what we're seeing everywhere else, too, except that we have Reaper of the Wild in the sideboard.
Do we now?
We do, and Sultai Charm in the main. So it's a little different, but it's the same shell. So his is a little different.
Yeah.
Four Reapers.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So he had something specific in mind for wanting to play four of those guys. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's good, given a depth touch, and especially the hexproof part, and that may be what he was thinking about more. You know, you've got a lot of these mid-range decks that run just a crap ton of removal, or even your blue-black control. You know, this guy gives himself hexproof, gives him depth touch. It's just solid body.
And I'd like to add, Yamamoto's also playing two Soul of Innistrad's in the main, instead of one in the board and one in the main.
Yeah, Soul of Innistrad. I'm curious to see what this guy's price is now, because all of the souls, they didn't really do much for the longest time. You know, you'd see one or two of here and there, but, you know, they never really made an impact until now, where Soul of Innistrad seems to be at least a one of in all of these decks, if not two. He's certainly on the way up.
I'm trying to think of maybe, I'm just sitting here mulling over Reaper and what matchup, maybe he's expecting a lot of things to die rather than just be exiled with Whip and get those scry effects off of.
Yeah, I believe it. Reaper blocks Siege Rhino.
Just about everything.
Yeah, Reaper blocks Siege Rhino
and kills
him.
Everything.
If you've got that black open, yeah, this could just be for the mid-range mirror, you know. It protects itself with the Hexproof. You know, whenever a creature does die, you get to scry. You get to give him Death Touch. It really encourages your opponent to not attack. I like it. You know, I did not see it on camera at all, but yeah, I like the addition. You know, something else that all of these decks have is a one of, at least in their sideboards, I've seen some in the main, is Farika, God of Affliction. What do you guys think about that? It's been in most of these Sultai lists from the start.
Either in the side or the main, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to work either way. Like, it can work both ways for you. If you're playing against a mirror, in Yamamoto's case, because he's playing CDC Whip, if you're playing against a mirror, then you can just take care of whatever they're going to whip back. If they think they're getting that Hornet Queen, you can make it sure that they don't.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about it in the mirror matchup, but yeah, that's a good point. And
Hornet Queen's going to produce four flying Death Touch, so you might as well just give them one Death Touch Snake on the ground.
Yeah, and in the finals, he actually got Farika online with the full seven devotion and swung in at Chapin at one point.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, that's something else to keep in consideration. You know, that is a 5/5 indestructible body.
Also, what's nice with Farika is the snakes come in as enchantments.
Yeah.
So if you just need that one more,
yeah, you're right,
push the Doomwake triggers over the top to give the Siege Rhino the -5 to kill him, hey, let's just exile something that I'm not going to whip back anyway. And
yep.
Yeah, these Seder Wayfinders aren't doing much in my graveyard anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can get that Doomwake Giant online and then untap with, you know, Farika on the board, you can just exile everything, be like, oh, enchantment, trigger, enchantment, trigger, enchantment, trigger. Yeah, you're wiping their whole side of the board. All right, big congratulations to Shahar Shenhar, 2-time world champion. Very impressive at 21 years old. That's amazing. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Big, big props to him. Moving on to Magic Online. I was pouring through some Magic Online daily results, and I came up with a few lists I'd like for us to touch on just real quick. The first one we have here is from a daily on, I think this was the fourth. Yep. Going down a bit, you've got Tradewind at 3-1 running a straight up Jeskai control list. If you guys have all this up, I'll go through the list real quick.
Got it.
For Planeswalkers, he's running 2 Chandra Pyromaster, 3 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 2 Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker.
This is 4-color control. He has Crackling Doom.
You are correct. Okay. This is, with his 4-color control, Tradewind is running those Planeswalkers. He's running 3 Anger of the Gods, 3 Inhostilities, so you have no creatures. 3 Treasure Crews, because you're playing blue, and why not? 2 Karanos, God of Storms. We talked about him last week.
Yeah.
2 in the main. 4 Crackling Doom, 4 Lightning Strike. He's running 26 lands. Don't want to miss those land drops. No Urborg, but yes, he does have some black sources in there. And for enchantments, he's got 4 Banishing Lights and 4 Chain to the Rocks. I picked this deck out because it looks good. It looks really good. Surprised he only went 3-1 with this thing. So what do you guys think? You like this?
We've got red, white, splash, some good other color stuff.
Red, white, blue.
What other blue? There's Treasure Cruise and Karanos.
Yeah.
Red, white, splash, some other stuff.
Okay, so, fair enough. Yeah, he's got all the best removal, all the mass removal. He's got, you know, your Lightning Strikes, your Crackling Dooms, 4 Chain to the Rocks, 4 Banishing Light. Then he's got Karanos on top of that, and this Planeswalker Suite to just close out the game. I like this list. You know, for a control list, this is not your dirtily piece of crap blue-white list, or blue-black list. This is fairly proactive, a lot of win conditions, and some cards we haven't really seen in Standard up till now.
Yeah, and he's running a 7 fetch land, so it looks like he's going to be able to hit every land drop he wants.
Yep. Surprisingly, though, no main deck life gain that I can see, so I guess his biggest weakness is your super aggro decks. but that's why he's running the three hostilities.
And he's running three Anger of the Gods, and that's going to take care of a lot of the current meta aggro.
Yep.
The inclusion of more aggro attacking planeswalkers versus just some, hey, I'm going to look at these cards, or you're going to discard a card, or I'm going to distribute counters. You know, we're going to make some dudes, or I'm going to become a dude, or I'm going to deal with direct damage. That's actually really nice to see in this control-type shell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, even with Mardu, when I'm playing against the aggro decks, I'll bring in Chandra, because she can just pick off all those little one-toughness creatures that these mono-red and even the mono-black aggro decks like to run. So she's pretty good. In the sideboard, we've got the fourth Anger of the Gods, three Glare of Heresy, one Steam Augury, yes, one End Hostilities, two Negate, three Erase, four Nyx Fleece Ram. So there's his aggro sideboard tech, along with another Anger of the Gods. I wanted to bring this up because this deck looks pretty fun. You know, I would consider sleeving this up and actually giving it a shot.
Yeah, this definitely looks like a good FNM sleeve.
Yep. And for all of these lists, we'll post links in the show notes. So if anybody wants to check out these lists, maybe try the deck themselves, give it a go, take a look at the links in the show notes. In this same event, I want to look at this Sultai Toolbox deck, I called it, from Time Lord, also 3-in-1. Yep, there it is. Okay, don't type in Time Lord if you're searching, because Lord is spelled with a 0.
Okay.
So, yeah, at 3-in-1... Does anybody want to talk about this deck, since I've been talking a lot?
It's got 25 creatures. Let's start with them. Two Doomwake Giants, two Eidolon of Blossoms, so you're getting that draw every time they land. Three Elvish Mystic, this seems more appropriate. Two Heir of the Wilds, one Night Howler, we'll talk about that when we get back to it. One Nylea, God of the Hunt, two Nyx Weaver, one Farika, God of Affliction, two Rattleclaw Mystic, one Reclamation Sage, four Satyr Wayfinders, three Sidisi Brood Tyrant, one Soul of Innistrad, Singleton Planeswalker, Ashiok, Nightmare Weaver, three Instants, Murderous Cuts, and four Sorceries, two Commune with the Gods, and two Treasure Cruise, three Artifacts, Whip of Erebos, and one Enchantment, Strength of the Fallen.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 23 lands, and it's actually got two Evolving Wilds.
Yep.
And lands, and so, two Urborgs. Wow.
Yeah, this is, it's, you know, your basic Sultai reanimator-ish deck, but he's just done a lot of different things here. And, you know, that's why I kind of call it a toolbox, because he's got a lot of different types of cards doing different things between your Eidolons, your Night Howler, your Nyx Weavers, Elvish Mystics.
Yeah, it's almost like a Sultai constellation.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you guys like this? This really caught my eye as I was looking through this whole event.
Let's hit on some of the unknown cards. Night Howler isn't used a lot. Three converted mana cost. One colorless, two black, enchantment creature horror. It's a 0/0. Bestow for two colorless, two black, and it says Nightmare, Howler, and enchanted creature each get +X/+X, where X is the number of creature cards in all graveyards.
Yep.
So with the current metagame, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you play against the mirror, or even just with your own deck, this guy can be huge, and you put him on the right body, and could get ugly.
That right body might be a Nyx Weaver, because that's pitching cards to your graveyard every upkeep. It's a three converted mana cost, one colorless, one black, one green, enchantment creature spider. It's a 2/3 with reach. At the beginning of your upkeep, put the top two cards of your library into your graveyard. So that's probably going to be pitching some of those things that make Night Howler get a little bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of these creatures are enchantment creatures, so you're hitting that constellation trigger, be it on your Doomwake or your Eidolon. You've got the two Eidolon of Blossoms in there, which we have been seeing less of lately. What is this Strength of the Fallen in here?
Amazing.
All right. Tell us about it.
Strength of the Fallen is an enchantment from the Theros block. One color is something green. Basically, whenever Strength from the Fallen or another enchantment enters the battlefield, target creature gets X/X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures in your graveyard. So kind of like Night Howler, but just for your side of the graveyard.
Yep.
And when you have this many enchantments going on and that much stuff in your graveyard, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you can get multiple triggers in the same turn, and this can stack up to make a big creature really fast. And, you know, you've got Nylea, God of the Hunt, in the main, so you're giving your creatures trample when she's online, and you get a couple of those Strength of the Fallen triggers, maybe get a Night Howler online, and you're swinging in with a big, bad creature.
Yeah, and not only that, like Renee was mentioning before, he's running a Farika, so at any time when you're attacking, you can exile one of your creatures and make the Constellation trigger.
Yep. Tell us about the sideboard real quick.
All right, it's got one Heir of the Wilds, so that adds one to the main, one Reclamation Sage, one Treasure Cruise, two Prognostic Sphinx, I'm guessing for the control matches, another Night Howler, another Soul of Innistrad, three Disdainful Strokes.
Disdainful Strokes, seeing it everywhere.
Yep, another Farika, another Ashiok, and three Nightlia's Disciple for those aggro matchups, I'm sure.
So, okay, before we close out this event, guys, Time Lords, Sultai Toolbox deck, thumbs up or thumbs down? Chad?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up because it's new.
Okay, Renee?
I like it.
Thumbs up for the inclusion of Nyx Weaver.
Yep, and I'm going to give it a thumbs up, too. I like all the different things he's trying to do. Could be a little bit too much, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It seems really fun, and it seems like when it works, it works. Back to the four-color control deck. Thumbs up or thumbs down, Renee?
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down, okay, Chad?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Okay, I'm going to give it a thumbs up as well. Like I said, this is something that I would sleeve up if I wanted to try a control deck again. It seems fun. Moving on.
Who doesn't mind playing Super Friends?
Yeah, basically. Speaking of Super Friends, moving on to another event on the 5th, I believe it was.
Yes.
Yep, we've got a couple of other decks looking at. So let's see. First, I want to talk about Given to Flies 4-0, what I labeled a four-color Super Friends deck.
I'll talk about this one.
Okay.
All right, sure. So in our Super Friends category, we've got an Ajani Mentor of Heroes, two Elspeth Sun's Champion, two Sarkon the Dragon Speaker, one Sorin, and two Xenagos the Reveler.
Xenagos. He's a guy we haven't seen much since the beginning of this season.
So disappointing.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. He is.
So carry on.
In the creature package, we've got two Enofenza the Foremost, three Butcher of the Hordling Outburst, four Corsair of Kerfix, four Siege Rhino, and four Sylvan Caryatid. Oh, no, we don't have any Hordling Outburst. All right, well, in instance, we've got two Abzan Charm, four Crackling Doom, three Lightning Strike, and one Murderous Cut, and then 25 lands, which are pretty boring. Yeah, pretty boring.
Pretty stuck.
Yep. I like this. You know, this guy went 4-0 in this event with this deck. He's running 8 Planeswalkers, 5 different walkers total. Looks like a lot of fun, and, you know, Xenagos, like I said, he's a guy we haven't seen in a while. You guys like this?
If I'm going to be greedy, I think this is how I'm going to go be greedy.
Yeah, because, you know, we looked at the what we called the Mardzan four-color mid-range list last week, and this is those same colors but doing a lot of different stuff. He's going more walker-heavy, less removal, and about the same amount of creatures. What do you say, Chad?
Yeah, I like it. I do. I love Xenagos. I've loved him ever since he was printed. Anafenza in the main looks really good with Butcher and Siege Rhino.
Yeah, with all of the whip decks we've been seeing lately, we could be seeing a lot more of that in the main. What do we got in the sideboard?
We've got a Xenagos, a Chandra, four Thoughtseize, four Anger of the Gods, one Drown in Sorrow, one Utter End, one Back to Nature,
yes,
and two End Hostilities.
All right, I have to admit, I'm a little upset that Chandra's not playing in the main.
I know, right? Why
not?
The full 6 different Planeswalkers seem to work, though. I do like that she's somewhere in this list. And
I feel like for the one Murderous Cut, we could put in a Chandra.
Yeah.
Maybe, but, you know, I think you still want some removal in there, too. If I cut anything, maybe a Lightning Strike? I don't know.
It's like Chandra is like the Aquaman for this deck. That's what it is. They're just putting her to the side.
You're saying she doesn't really matter?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
To the fish?
Yeah, it's a one of, and she's talking to the goblins, and there's none there, so they just put her away. That's what they did.
Yeah. I do like Chandra Pyromaster. I've been on record as saying that, you know, they've done red really good by the last two Planeswalkers between her and Sarkon the Dragon Speaker. You know, red Planeswalkers were a joke up to this point. But
well, now, Tybalt was amazing. No, I can't say that without laughing. So
okay, you're not invited back next week. You know,
I'm the sad person who absolutely loves Tybalt. Like, not Tybalt the card, but Tybalt the character.
The Vorthos, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is the last episode of I can't believe I'm listening to this. Okay, so, four color super friends. Thumbs up or thumbs down? Renee?
Thumbs up.
Jed?
I'm thumbs downing it because Chandra's been denied.
All right, again, I like all these decks because I picked them out. So, yeah, thumbs up for this one. It seems really fun.
Come up sometime.
Yeah, hooray for the return of Xenagos. I'd love to see this make a splash somewhere on the national scene, be it at an Open or a Grand Prix. Keep an eye out on this one. Moving on, we have one other deck I wanted to take a look at was C2CK Sibras's 3-in-1 Abzan deck. So let's scroll down and take a look at that. Okay, I'll run through this one.
Okay.
For Planeswalkers, we have 3 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 1 Liliana Vess, 2 Soren Solemn Visitor. For creatures, we've got 4 Corsair Crucifix, 1 Hornet Queen, 4 Siege Rhino, 1 Soul of Theros, 2 Selvan Caryatid, 2 Wingmate Rock. We've got 4 Thoughtseize, 4 Abzan Charm, 4 Hero's Downfall, and for enchantments, we have 1 Banishing Light. What do you guys think of this?
I can dig it.
Yeah?
I don't like it.
No?
No. I mean, he went 3-1, so kudos to C2CK Cerberus, but I don't know. It's got a singleton Hornet Queen. It seems like the Liliana's only going to be a tutor for 5 mana. And, I like the 4 Thoughtseize. It's got a singleton Banishing Light, so it doesn't seem like that's going to be doing much work. And I like the Soul of Theros, but it's got no interaction with the graveyard, even though it seems like it should.
Yeah. Okay.
What interaction with the graveyard do you need?
I want to get that Hornet Queen back if they take care of it, if something happens to it. And I don't know. It just seems like he's going mid range. But
well, of course. But you know, he's not going the whip route. You know, he's not running Whip of Erebos anywhere in the 75. Yeah. He's just going straight honest mid range.
Yeah. Which, so maybe I'm just biased to Reanimator all of a sudden.
Well,
so.
You know, that's true because you know honest mid range, despite winning the Open, seems like it's kind of got its back to the wall right now with all these Reanimator decks floating around. So, okay, I can see that.
Well,
so
another perspective here is, yeah, Liliana is just a tutor, but you have to look at it at 5 mana, just getting them to discard a card really isn't all that helpful at that point.
Yeah.
Hornet Queen is on the board, and yeah, if they have a targeted kill spell, sure, but she already has 4 friends with her. And she also dodges Elspeth's -3.
Yeah.
So you're going to get left behind for either 4-1-1 death touching, or her and 4-1-1 death touching.
Okay.
And
right.
She gets bigger with Soren and lifelinking death touching.
True.
All right, so you guys have convinced me. I'm going to give this a thumbs down. Chad, what do you say?
Well, I think Renee was trying to convince you to thumbs up it, but I'm going to thumbs down.
All right, Renee?
I'm going to thumbs up it because it's an interesting take, and I think with some work it could really get somewhere. I like seeing Soul of Theros and lots of lifelink and lots of neat ideas here that I think people have been wanting to see from Abzan that haven't come through yet.
Yeah, I do like Soul of Theros.
I agree with that.
It's a neat one of, but you know, again, there are a lot of other ways to gain life in this format, so maybe, maybe not. So, and listeners too, let us know what you think. Shoot us an email and tell us if you like, dislike either of these decks, and we'll talk about it next week. Speaking of which, we had a listener, Andrew Powelka, I believe. Andrew, thank you so much for your email, and tell me if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, but he sent us Travis Wu's newest update of Dirty Blue, and he wanted to get our opinion of it. So we pulled this up here. Anybody want to read off the list?
Sure. Okay, so it's got 15 islands. These are the lands, the land breakdown. 15 islands, 4 Darksteel Citadels, 1 Nykthos Shrine to Nyx, so we don't see that a lot, which is really nice to see. Then for creatures, it's got 4 Ornithopter, 4 Hypnotic Siren, 4 Triton Shorestalker, 1 Thassa, God of the Sea, haven't seen her in a while, 3 Chasm Skulker, 3 Omen Speaker, 1 Chief Engineer, which I think is an amazing card, 4 Master of the Waves, and then to the non-creature spells, we have 4 Springleaf Drums, which is very underplayed at the moment, 4 Ensoul Artifact, 4 Military Intelligence, so we'll get back to that, 2 Hall of Triumph, 2 Binding of Thassa, and that's the main deck. We'll go into the sideboard a little bit.
Yep, you guys like this deck. I mean, we've seen variants of this between, like, the blue, red, and soul artifact decks. This is just a straight-up mono-blue, lot of tiny blue creatures. You know, you've got some of your old mono blue devotion spells like Master of Waves, Thassa. For me, I'm not a huge fan, only because I've crushed every variant deck like this with Mardu. The only way that I feel like these decks can be successful is if they get that early in soul on a Darksteel Citadel or Ornithopter, and even then, it's not game over because there's removal that takes care of that.
I like seeing Chasm Skulker with Military Intelligence.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's a nice interaction.
And then just with some of the other draw pieces that are in here, just I feel like that is a cool thing that I would have overlooked if I had been building a deck, but I'm not a deck builder, so hey, there we go.
Yeah.
I am not Travis Wu.
Yeah, and you know, I think the Military Intelligence is really the fuel that this deck needs to keep going through all of the pieces of removal and everything. Because if you can get that online and a couple of these early cheap creatures online, I can see that, you know, really building an advantage for you despite your creatures not having much of a body. But I can't get behind it because of all the removal in the format. Chad, you haven't really said much. What do you think?
I think Travis was trying to go for a standard affinity. Like, he was trying to make the Ornithopters work as soon as possible, and the Military Intelligence are amazing, especially if even if you have the Ornithopters, you can still attack in and can get that draw, even if they're zeros.
Yeah.
I like the Nykthos, but it doesn't seem like there's much blue going on. I know that in Soul and Intelligence are going to be there as permanents, but also for Master of the Waves, it doesn't seem like that's going to go off that often as a big card.
Yeah, I can see very few times where you would activate Nykthos in this deck to get any kind of mana ramp, because almost everything besides, it looks like, Biden is just a one blue in the cost.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to make everything unblockable.
Yeah.
That is true. You know, that could be a thing too, but
in the board, in the sideboard, we've got an extra Nykthos, mm-hmm. two Disdainful Strokes, which we've seen do work already,
yep.
one Negate, two Singing Bellstrikes, two Daring Thief, one Hour of Need, one extra Binding of Thassa. I'm sorry. Binding of Thassa is in the board. There's none in the main.
Right.
No,
there's two in the main.
There is? Oh, yep. It's on the second page.
Yep.
Okay. An extra Binding of Thassa, one Dissolve, one Icy Blast, and three Stubborn Denials.
Yep.
I think Stubborn Denial works really well with Ensoul Artifact. I really like Singing Bellstrike, even though Jason hates blue-white heroic. But I do like that.
You know what? I mean, I'm not against Singing Bellstrike itself. It's a decent card, only if you get it out early. It's really just kind of to buy you time, you know, while you're trying to build up your presence and everything. But I don't dislike it as a card. It's very narrow in what it can do. But
yeah.
It's not bad. Now, a couple of the cards in the main here that people may not even know what they are. First of all, Hypnotic Siren. It's a one blue enchantment creature, Siren. It's a 1/1 with flying, but it also has Bestow for 7. You control enchanted creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has flying. It's really it's a control magic Bestow creature, and gives the creature that you take control of flying and +1/+1. Could be nice if you can get up to 7 mana to actually cast it for its Bestow, but he's running 4 of those. For Triton Shorestalker, which is a 1/1, can't be blocked Merfolk creature, and everything else we've pretty much seen in one form or another. Omen Speaker I like. When Omen Speaker enters the battlefield, scry 2. It's a 1/3 for 1 and a blue. Not a terrible body, and get to do a little library manipulation. You guys got anything to say about those cards?
Omen Speaker, I think Omen Speaker is basically the blue, obviously for a short while, the blue Sylvan Carried in this deck. It seems like it's just going to fix your top two, and hopefully either you get what you want or you're going to pitch to the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, I like it against these aggressive decks. You know, you drop it on 2 and you can block some of these red creatures or even these mono black creatures that are coming in. It's not bad. Overall, again, I'm not a fan. What do you guys think? Let's just do the thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you say, Renee?
Thumb in the middle. Like, I think this is a great tier 2 budget type deck to take to FNM. I don't think that I would take this necessarily to an open RGP.
Okay. Chad?
I agree with Renee. I'm going to give it a thumbs up, though, and just make one more interaction. In the sideboard, it's got Hour of Need, and that's 3 converted mana cost, 2 and a blue, and instant, Strive. Hour of Need costs one and a blue more to cast for each target beyond the first. So remember Nykthos. Exile any number of target creatures for each creature exiled this way. Its controller puts a 4/4 blue Sphinx creature token with flying onto the battlefield. While it is in the sideboard and there's only one of, I feel like that's a really good card for this deck, especially with the Shorestalkers and the Omen Speakers that won't be doing much for you on the ground other than blocking.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, it's an instant, so you can respond to removal.
Yep.
You know, if you are swinging in with a creature, you can then Strive this guy, get a 4/4 flyer. Yeah, it seems decent, but, yeah, I'm going to give this a thumbs down. I appreciate what he's trying to do here, but it... I think you've got a bad matchup against most of the tier one decks in the format. So yeah, I'm going to give it the thumbs down. Again, thank you, Andrew, for the email. We appreciate it, and send us some more, send us some other deck lists that you may want us to take a look at, and let's go ahead and move on. Last week we did three questions for the cast, and we're going to do it again this week. We'll start with Chad. You want to ask the first two questions from the cast?
Sure. All right, guys. What do you think is better for your first turn land? Let's say you're holding a tricolor land, a scry land, and a fetch in your hand, and the rest of your cards are amazing. Which one would you drop first? Renette, you can answer.
I have this happen a lot. And I typically play the scry land first. That way I can set up my second turn a lot better for what I want to do. And then since a lot of the mid-range decks want to not really do anything until turn four, but on turn four you better not miss it, I'll play the tricolor land on turn two, because I've already been set up a lot better. Or if I have that Caryatid in my hand, then I'll fetch to get the land I need to play the Caryatid.
Mm-hmm.
And then scry land on turn three. So turn two becomes very dependent on what I've scryed, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. Jason?
I also have this come up a lot, and I'm just going to speak strictly from the Mardu standpoint. I'd say about 80% of the time, I go with the scry land first, because as Renee said, you want to get that early fixing. Most of the time, there's always a type of card I either want to see or don't want to see come up next. So I drop that scry land if it's, you know, if I'm only holding two lands in hand, I'll scry away anything that is not a land. Or if I've got too many lands, I'll want to scry away any land. Every once in a while, I'll have the perfect hand where it doesn't matter what I draw, be it a land or a non-land, it's going to be good for me, so... Every once in a while, I will play the three-color land. I almost never play a fetch on turn one. And my typical curve goes something like scry land first and then fetch land second, because turn two is pretty important for Mardu. As, you know, on turn two, I either want to be holding mana for a lightning strike or drop a Seeker of the Way. That's typically how my turns go. Turn one, scry. Turn two, either fetch or just an untapped land, and either hold a removal or drop the threat. If every once in a while I'll come into a situation where I need the double red by turn three because I'm running, you know, Hordling Outburst, and I'll have maybe a Temple of Silence, which is the white-black temple, that I won't want to drop first because I want to make sure I get my red sources out. So that's one situation where I would drop the tricolor land over a temple. But otherwise, it's temple, I'd say 80% of the time.
Okay, I would say I agree. I'd probably drop the scry land other than if I'm looking for a turn three, obviously a turn two Caryatid. But most of the time, I like to drop the tricolor only because I'm trying to hit that three-color combo, and I think the scry on turn two it's not going to help anything other than what you already know, but I think the scry on turn two, I like to just give my first draw it doesn't really matter because I'm going to have the land base out there already. So that's my decision. Now, if I'm playing and I've got a Thoughtseize in hand and I've got the fetch, I personally wait, especially in this meta, I wait until turn two to cast the Thoughtseize just because I want to see what their first land is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You want to ask the second one also?
Sure.
Did you drop your microphone?
I hit it with my thumb. Jason, what underrated card has surprised you this week in Standard?
I wouldn't say surprise me so much as it's finally getting its due, and that is Disdainful Stroke. It's a great counterspell, hits so many cards in the format. It's finally seen the play that I think it deserved, even though I'm not a fan of counterspells in general. It's a good spell, and I've been seeing it a lot this weekend, and people are finally starting to respect it and play around it, as we were talking before.
Renee?
not so much a surprise to see, as much a surprise to see a lack of, is Deflecting Palm. Okay. With all of these large amounts of damage that people are putting through.
Yeah.
So, I'm surprised that it's disappeared out of the Jeskai decks, and some of the Mardu decks haven't even picked it up.
Yeah, and you know what? That's interesting, too, because if I'm not mistaken, that prevents damage from the creature, and then...
doubles it back.
Yeah, and it's not the creature doing damage back, right? It's the actual spell. It's Deflecting Palm doing the damage, correct?
Yeah.
This is good for your Whip of Erebos decks, you know. And I've had a couple of times where I'll get these guys down to almost nothing, and then they'll drop Whip, swing in with a big creature, and that just completely changes the whole game. Whereas something like Deflecting Palm could
Deflecting...
put your deck over the top and keep them from coming back.
Deflecting Palm reads as red-white, instant. The next time a source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn, prevent that damage. If damage is prevented this way, Deflecting Palm deals that much damage to that source's controller.
I like that. What do you say, Chad?
I'm going to have to jump on the counterspell. I think Stubborn Denial. I think because of... so many Siege Rhinos that are hitting, like, Stubborn Denial is a big card for all the mass removal that's around.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'm going to ask the last question. If you guys could have one card reprinted in Standard for you to play with, what would it be? Now, I'm going to add a caveat to this. No cards that are banned in any format or was ever banned in Standard. No card that is just completely broken. A card that Wizards would actually consider reprinting in Standard. Which one would you guys like to see? Chad, I know you're excited about this.
All right. Well, I apologize to all the Vorthos players because they would hate for this card to come back because of its lore. But I would say Dismember. I think right now Dismember would be as good, if not better, than Murderous Cut at the moment, just because there's nothing much higher than 5, and there's nothing that has protection from black, so I don't think anything would stand in its way, and it would give control a better matchup, but it wouldn't hinder any of the other decks. I think it would make Mardu better. I think it would make Abzan better.
Oh yeah, it'd make all these mid-range decks better.
Yeah, so I wouldn't want it to be an unfair reprint.
Alright, so for the listeners, if anybody isn't familiar with it, tell us what it actually is.
Okay, so it's 1 colorless and 2 black, but these black are Phyrexian mana, so that means you can use a black to cast it, or you can use 2, or you can pay 2 life. So it's basically 1 black-black, or 1 4 life. And it gives target creature -5/-5.
Man, that would be amazing right now. Forget your Sadisis, forget your Butcher of the Hordes, forget your Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, and
takes care of them all.
Yeah, and I think it would be fair in this format because most of the decks that would do it, I mean, granted, there would be a lot of Esper and a lot of Abzan playing it, so they could cast it, but some of the decks that couldn't deal with those decks might be able to think about how many they could run because they're taking life.
Yep. All right, Renee, what do you say? Which card would you like to play with again?
Alright, so I've got 2, but one of them's kind of a given that it's going to be reprinted at some point in time, so I don't feel it counts.
Okay.
Damnation. And I think the collective internet can, like, scream with me that, yes, we want this.
Do you think that'll ever get reprinted in Standard? I mean, they've shown that they're not big fans of the 4-mana sweeper anymore, especially in black.
So I don't know if it'll get reprinted in Standard. I do think it'll get reprinted in some time just to make it more available.
Yeah, that's a given. I'm talking strictly Standard here. What would you like?
Strictly Standard. So I'm really predictable. I really want to see Terrace Big Elephant do Terrastodon. There we go.
Green.
Yeah. Because, you know, 9/9 big green elephant dudes, and I have my elephant tokens ready to give to people when I destroy their stuff. And I have ways to kill their elephants that I've just given them and take back my elephant tokens. So please just give me this joy.
Terrastodon, that would be something. My card is, well, my first inclination would be to say Birthing Pod, because that is my favorite magic card of all time. But I'm realistic when I say that they will probably never put that in Standard again. So my other card is another recent favorite, Thundermaw Hellkite. He's awesome. Like, if we're talking dragons, you know, there doesn't get any better than that. Thundermaw Hellkite is pretty amazing.
And yeah, I think that would work, too.
Yeah, I loved him when he was in Standard. I don't think he was too overpowered. I mean, granted, he was a power creature, but he was never overpowered where he just simply dominated a format. But in the right deck, man, he was great.
Yeah, Teemer would love you.
Yeah.
That got reprinted.
Yeah, I doubt we'll see him in Dragons of Tarkir, but we could see him down the line. Again, you know, good card, not overpowered, not really warping any Eternal formats, but I'd love to see him again in Standard. So let's keep going because we're running out of time here for local tournament reports. Let's talk about how we've all been playing this week. So Renee, I know you've got a big story for us, so talk to us about that.
Okay, so Saturday I went to the PPTQ because this was the first weekend for them. Currently, it seems like Planeswalker Points is having some issues with the reporting of these items. They are coming up as time zero multipliers. If you guys see this in your Planeswalker Points, hit the correction button, click on other, and send them a report so they know this is happening. I've already done it for mine, but I've seen a couple people pop up on Twitter talking about this. And it's supposed to be a times four multiplier, so that's kind of an issue because you want to get your Planeswalker points.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had about 25 people at our PPTQ, which was five rounds. The normal I was seeing was somewhere between 5 to 6 rounds for most PPTQs across the country. A couple of them, I think, got up to 7, but it was just over that bracket to get into 7. All of them had the top, cut to top 8 because it's a comp roll event, so yep. That was just a given. I busted out the bug control list I've been working on, expecting to see a lot of the Jeskai token decks and the Mardu token type decks that were using a lot of the Hordling Outbursts. And I got stuck playing a lot of the four color control lists.
Mm. So yeah. when you say four color control, you talk like the four color mid range, like the Mardu Abzan hybrids.
Or yeah, the exact Brad Nelson four colors. Okay. You know, I'm super greedy and want to play all the good card decks.
So my question to you is, what tech were you running to fight these token decks?
I had a lot of Drown in Sorrows, Bile Blights. I was playing Dissolves in the main board. If I had known I was going to be playing the mid-range decks, I would have put in Disdainful Strokes in the main board instead of the sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
We had Ashiok in order to just start exiling their cards right off the top. And then we were also playing Villainous Wealth to hopefully be able to cast all their cards. And I got every Villainous Wealth I hit and was able to cast for more than 4, I wound up just hitting, like, straight lands from these people.
Oh,
I was like, are you serious?
I mean, I love Villainous Wealth. We talked about it a bit last week. I really want that card to be good, and I hope somebody figures out a way, or if just as the block progresses, you know, I just want to see cards, like, help facilitate it and help make it better. So,
I wound up, I technically went 0-4. One of my opponents, though, was kind enough to give me the win because he was going to drop anyway and go play a side event. So my record actually shows as 1-3. Trevor was playing his Mardu aggro deck, and he also went 1-3. Mm. Pretty much every time he would get to that critical point, he would then just run out of gas. So we're trying to figure out ways to fix that as well. I have some things that I need to fix, and hopefully we'll come back next week with something better.
Yeah, so, and you know, you mentioned this is the start of the PPTQ season. What was the atmosphere like? You know, I haven't been to one yet, so.
So it's interesting, because we went to a store that's about 2 hours away that we've never been to before, which, I mean, already you're a little bit on guard, and to me it seemed like some of the players were maybe a little bit more rules lawyery than they would have been in some other environments.
Sure, sure. Which is understandable. I mean, this is to reach that regional PTQ, which are the new PTQs. So, I mean, I can understand people taking it more seriously, for sure.
Yeah, but it wasn't so much taking it more seriously as much as it was trying to goad the opponents into doing things.
No.
Yeah, like the one guy, there was one issue over triggers, and somebody who clearly knew that lifelink wasn't a trigger was trying to, making their opponent very upset and, you know, causing an incident in a scene over this.
Oh, really?
You know, then his opponent comes back and quite explicitly states, it's not a trigger, you so and so.
Right,
and
right.
So the guy raises his hand and is like, Judge, he says so and so. And the judge is like, I've been watching this. You just goaded him into saying so and so. Both of you knock it off. Or you're both going to get DQ'd.
Well, good on the judge for, you know, not taking any crap from these guys and, you know, trying to keep order there, so.
Yeah, and it was worse during the earlier rounds. Once everyone, I guess, calmed down, it got better. Yeah. But I'm hoping that I was hearing some other stories about PPTQs that had people acting similarly, not the same, but I'm hoping that this system doesn't bring this type of behavior out in players. Yeah, like, you know, guys, go try and do your best, practice, get all of that in, try and win. It's great if you win. Don't make it miserable for everyone else there.
Yeah, don't be
your time there is not more important than everyone else's time there.
Mm-hmm.
And the store has that feeling and will not be afraid to kick you out because of that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, again, good on him. Chad, did you play it all this week?
I did not. I was the family man this week, so.
All right, well, you know, like, kudos to you two on that. I'll go into my F&M real quick. Took my Mardu Midrange to my local store, Ron's Comic World, in Mount Holly, New Jersey. I went 3-1 in the four rounds. My first round opponent was my friend Ed Morgan. He was playing Green Red Devotion. This is typically a bad matchup for me, but he ended up kind of drawing poorly, getting stuck on lands a little bit, and I ended up beating him 2-0. In round two, I played a new guy at the store, Edward, who was playing a mono-black aggro. He caught me by surprise and actually took game one, but this is a favorable matchup for me, and I ended up beating him in games 2 and 3. Round three, I played against Eddie Gamble, so yes, I played against Ed, Edward, and Eddie in rounds 1, 2, and 3. And Eddie Gamble is one of the better players in the store. He was playing Sidisi Whip, which is a bad matchup for me. He took game one. I got him down to 6 life before he resolved a Whip of Erebos and started bringing back Hornet Queens, and it was pretty much over at that point. In games 2 and 3, I was able to eke it out, and I went to 3-0 at that point. The last round is the one I really wanted to talk about. I played against my very good friend Neil DeMarco. Good guy. Glad it was he and I in the finals. We were the only 3-0s at that point. I knew he was on your Jeskai aggro tempo deck, which, again, very favorable matchup for Mardu. And I think I went into it overconfident because I beat him in game one. Butcher of the Horde and Hordling Outburst just took over, got all the life gain I needed, got all the tempo I needed, and I took game one. At this point, I'm feeling extremely confident, and I start playing slop. And I've been known to do this in the past. You know, I'll get up one game, think I've got a good matchup, and I start playing poorly. And I made one huge mistake in game two that cost me game two. And I don't know, it's nothing against Neil because he's a great player and, you know, like I said, he's a good friend of mine, but I feel like I should not be making these stupid mistakes at this point in my Magic playing career. You know, I feel like I'm better than that, and I guess I need to work on my overconfidence level because I should have won game two, but I made just a dumb mistake. And then in game three, again, I kept a questionable hand because I thought, oh, I'm on the play and it's a favorable matchup, and I should have mulliganed, and I ended up losing game three. I went 3-1 on the night, got 3 prize packs, cracked a Bloodstained Mire, so it wasn't a total loss for the evening, and I'm still just kind of beating myself up over that misplay in game two. I did not get to go to any PPTQs this weekend because I got kind of forced into going to my work's Christmas party. You know, if I'd had any kind of spine, I would have just told these guys, no, I have other stuff I want to do this weekend. But being the environment that I work in, they kind of persuaded me to go. And this is something I wanted to ask you guys about. Do either of you, you know, let's call a spade here. I mean, we're all nerds. You know, we play this Magic the Gathering game. We're all in our 20s and 30s. We're geeks, nerds, whatever you want to call us. And I work with a bunch of people that are your typical, I guess, alpha males. You know, I'm in the military, and I work in a flying squadron in the military, and it's just a bunch of, you know, the type of guy. You know, your guy that was a football player in high school and college. So we got a lot of guys that played football for the Air Force Academy. And when I work with these guys, I still feel like that skinny nerd in high school who's just kind of looking down as he walks through the hallway, hoping nobody like says something or insults me or anything like that. Do you guys feel that way at your places of work? I mean, do you feel like you have to hide who you are as far as your like your nerdness or whatever? Anybody?
I'll let Chad talk to this before I talk to it.
Okay. Sure. Personally, no. And I don't know how to touch this delicately, but in high school, I was always the nonconformist. I didn't care about the cliques. I didn't care about the groups. And I was usually the one that just went on with my own thing. So I played Magic in high school, and if somebody said something about it, I shrugged it off. So in my work environment right now, I work with Jason in another area, and I'm in the Air Force as well. I don't know. I almost feel like we can't feel that way anymore because it's over. It's childish. It's a childish mentality. And I basically, when I applied for my job, I was like, okay, I'm a really good worker. I'll come to work on time. I'll do my job right, and I play Magic the Gathering. Like, that's basically how I went into the interview because I want them to know what I'm about, and I don't want to be judged for it. And I think that if you're a much easier target if you hide in the shadows, and you can, it's easier for them to pick on you if you feel like you should be picked on.
Right. And, you know, that's something I guess I still have to work on because, like I said, you know, I still feel intimidated by all these guys when I work with them. And I know I shouldn't. I mean, Christ, I'm in my mid-30s. I'm a married father of three. I shouldn't have to feel like I need to hide this part of myself when I'm around these people, but I still do. And I actually got outed at our Christmas party because, you know, someone took a picture of me and my son Robert at F&M. And put it on Facebook, which is fine. I have no issue with that. A couple of coworkers are also Facebook friends. And, you know, at the Christmas party, one of them brought up, oh, was that you and your son playing Magic the Gathering? And they were kind of ribbing me, not being mean at all, but, you know how people get sometimes when they kind of rib on each other.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the places that we work, it's much worse because people try and, unfortunately, the way it is that the military is kind of like high school because people never really got out into the real world. They never really understood what it is. And whatever weaknesses they can find in people, so they call it, they try and bite that down to try and get an advantage. But in truth to me, it's one that they're jealous or two that they just don't understand it. Like if you ask, like, whenever somebody asks me what it is, I tell them it's chess with, like, 10,000 pieces because you can't really understand how to play the game unless you actually do it. So
yeah.
There's no way to – there's no reason anybody should criticize.
Yeah, I like that. Chess with 1,000 pieces. All right, Renee, what do you have for this topic?
All right, so I can relate from a couple different angles and give advice from a couple different angles because – one, everything I've ever done, I've always been an outsider. I'm a female firefighter, so I was an outsider in that regard. And I work for, similar to you guys, I work with a bunch of retired military guys.
Okay.
I get that mentality, but I don't have that chain of command where you guys can go and say, or report up if something's an issue. I have an HR that is just as incompetent. But at the same time, like, if I am not telling people what I do, I am not able to say anything at all at work. Because just about everything I do outside of work is just completely off the wall.
Right.
And my job is actually pretty low female-to-male ratio.
Hmm.
So I'm kind of in that position naturally to be this outsider. So I've just kind of gotten over it. My first day of work at my new job, in my bag with me, I had a notebook, a pen, all of the paperwork, and my PlayStation Vita because I had a train ride and I needed something to do.
Oh, yeah.
I love my Vita.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then I put it on my desk. While I'm filling out extra paperwork and had it playing, and somebody came up to me and was like, oh, you have a video game thing. I was thinking about getting my X, Y, and Z kid this for their birthday. Can you tell me about it? And that opened the door to so many other conversations.
Yeah.
So while I get ribbed a little bit for my nerdiness, I'm also respected for it. and I've set it up so that I'm respected for it, and they know that if I don't feel respected, I will tell them straight up, and they will take the step back and figure out what they said that made it disrespectful and fix it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go about it. So we are pretty much out of time here, so let's close this up. We'd be remiss if we didn't at least mention that the new Modern Masters was announced today. Modern Masters 2015 edition is coming out in May. There is a new Grand Prix Las Vegas in May, which is sure to top the attendance of the last one, which was the largest Grand Prix of all time.
$10 packs.
Oh, I know. What? Well, see, here's the thing, because when that first came out, nobody was selling it for MSRP anyway, which was, what, $6.99 for the first Modern Masters?
$7.
Yeah, so stores were jacking up the prices already anyway. And now they're saying that it's still going to be a limited print release, but not as limited as the first Modern Masters, so that should even out. I don't think you'll see retailers jacking up the MSRP when this one comes out.
I still think they're going to be $15.
On $10? Yeah, on $10, they better not jack it up.
Well, and, you know, it depends on what's in it, too. Like, we only know two cards for sure that are in it, Emrakul and Etch Champion. So, if there are no Bobs and no Goyfs in this, then there may not be the demand for jacking up prices beyond $10. So, we'll see. Anything else on Modern Masters, guys?
Nope.
All right.
Not right now.
Okay, final thoughts. Anything else you guys want to bring up real quick before we close this out?
Yeah, I've got a final thought. First of all, thanks to everybody that's listening, or if you're listening on your ride to work, your ride home from work, whatever you do. That's what I personally listen to podcasts on. The only way you're going to get better at Magic is to study. You can listen to people. You can put decks together, but the only way you're going to get better is by actually going out and trying them. So play at your local gaming stores, play with your friends, play casually, just try anything you want and put the decks together that we're suggesting. And don't feel bad if they're bad, because we might be suggesting bad decks. But yeah, those are my finals.
And piggybacking on that, you know, if you are serious about getting, you know, about committing to a format and trying to get better at a format, study those deck lists. Know exactly what the format consists of. And over time, you'll know exactly what their lines of play are going to be before they even make those plays. And that's half of the battle of doing well in a format, is knowing what you're up against.
Oh, yeah.
So Renee, what you got?
If you guys do try out some of the decks that we're suggesting that are, you know, aren't the typical Star City deck list decks, let us know what your results are and let us know what you think and if it is in line with what we're saying. That way we can start to adapt to what you're seeing, because that's important too, that we are giving everybody accurate information and accurate thoughts, because it is just thoughts and we really do not have the time to play everything.
And yeah, again, thanks to everybody that gave us some feedback this week. You know, some guys on Facebook were commenting, so we got some emails, had some guys talk to us in person. So again, thanks for all the feedback, and, you know, keep it coming. Let us know what you want to see more of, less of. Let us know how annoying we are or how cool we are. Either way, just keep giving us the feedback. So let's move right on to shout-outs. Renee, you got any shout-outs?
Shout-out to my husband, Trevor, who is sorting all our cards so we can go bulk them at GP Baltimore this weekend. Mm-hmm. We will definitely be there Saturday, so please come say hi.
All right. Chad?
Just to my wife and my daughter. Just a shout-out, thanking them for being here.
Love for the family. All right, I got a few shout-outs here, so bear with me. First, I want to give a shout-out to Bob Healy from Ron's Comic World. He's a newer guy that's been playing at the store. I think he and I have maybe had one conversation total before this weekend, and he came up to me on Friday and said, "Hey, man, I've been listening to your podcast and reading your articles, and you know, he's been very entertained. He really likes what we're doing." So, Bob, thank you so much. And since then, he and I have been doing some practicing on Magic Online. I want to give a huge shout-out to Ed Morgan from the store. Ed Morgan, another good friend of mine, he just found out that he and my son Robert share a birthday. And he had never met my son before, and I took him to F&M this week. And Ed got him a birthday present. He got him a whole bunch of extra cards, some packs, and threw them all into one of those holiday gift boxes. And he gave that to Rob for a birthday present, you know.
Nice.
So that's awesome, Ed. Thank you so much, buddy. And Rob really loved it. And, again, you are the man. Another shout out to Bernadette Perry, who did our logo. If you guys have seen it, it's the black mana symbol with the headphones on. That was done by my sister-in-law, Bernadette. Thanks, Bernie. Love it. Another big shout out to Ryan, Sid, Ruben, and Matt, and everybody else from Cast from Exile. These guys were really cool about letting me advertise our podcast on their Facebook group. So go listen to Cast from Exile. And again, thanks, guys. And a big thanks to Jack LaCroix, who got me into MTG Bro Deals and allowed me to write for the website. And it's because of him that I'm doing this for you. So thank you, Jack. And go listen to Not Another Magic Podcast.
And this is only really ironic because I feel like I'm being thanked by Jack all the time for keeping his ass in line.
Yeah, that's right. So, yes, thank you, Renee, for keeping Jack in line. So, all right, thanks, guys, for joining us this week, and we'll be back. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.